This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Media Explode 36, Return of the Jedi 40th Anniversary. Hello, welcome to iFanboy Media Explode, episode 36, Return of the Jedi 40th Anniversary. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hi there.
And Ron Richards.
Hello, friends.
And we're here to discuss the 40th anniversary of Return of the Jedi. Ron, do you need to do a disclaimer?
It is the 40th anniversary of Return of the Jedi. It is shocking. Are we going to start with what we've been watching?
Well, yeah, but do you need to disclaim the episode since we're talking about a Disney property?
Oh, yeah, no, I work for the Walt Disney Company. These opinions are my own.
Okay.
There you go. I don't work on Star Wars, so there's no way. But also, like, the movie was made 40 years ago.
Did you when it came out.
Yeah, I feel like the statute of limitations has been lifted.
Okay.
On that.
So we'll be discussing that. And thanks, by the way, this is a show unlocked by our patrons over at patreon.com/ifanboy. They also unlock the Books Below, the Talks Below, lots of great shows for you to listen to and enjoy. Thanks for being a patron if you are one, and consider being one if you're not. We appreciate it. Let's dive in because we got a lot to talk about. Let's start how we always do with what we've been enjoying since we last spoke.
Let's catch up. Yeah. So I was on a plane and had a moment to watch it. I've talked about it on the show in the past. I love to watch a good documentary while on the plane. And so for some reason, I chose Meet Me in the Bathroom, which is the documentary about the early 2000s music scene in New York City, kind of centered around the Strokes and Yeah Yeahs and TV on the radio. And
that's what you usually say on the plane to somebody else. Meet Me in the Bathroom.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The beginnings of LCD sound system.
That's sort of the end of rock, right? That's sort of like the last gasp of popular rock.
No, the last gasp of popular rock is probably Coldplay in the mid-2000s, I would say.
White Stripes.
White Stripes, yeah, like Stripes, the 2006, Black Keys. Like 2006, 2007, that was the last gasp.
Yes, okay.
This is like 99, 2000, 2001.
That's fair.
El Camino was the last, like, so it's 2010.
Yeah. So, yeah, 2007 and 2010, the beginning of the National, like, I feel like that, you know, Bon Iver, you know, like all that.
Bon Iver. Yeah, then you're getting pretty niche, though. I don't know Bon Iver. Yeah. I never hit the popular consciousness.
Oh, it did. It was a lot of TV shows and a lot of Grey's Anatomy had Bon Iver.
The format of what that looked like changed a lot during that time.
So. Yeah, exactly. But that's not the point. So I watched this documentary and it was fun because I had a lot of footage of New York City in 99, 2000, whatever. But I just find it baffling because I realized that I cannot name a single Stroke song by title. And the only song I know is that one, which I don't even know the name of the song.
It sounds like a Tom Petty song.
I guess so. Yeah.
Last night,
and it's so funny because they spent all this time setting the scene of the New York independent music scene in 2000, which like I was there, but like not for any of those bands, right? And so I just found it really like, and admittedly, I understand they got on MTV and they were they blew up and all this sort of stuff. And there was a record label feeding frenzy in New York that came out of it.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But I just found it fascinating that it was like a time in my like a moment and a time that I was absolutely there for. Like they're talking about, you know, those bands playing the Mercury Lounge. I would go to the Mercury Lounge all the time, not to see these bands, right, but to see other bands.
I feel like that was,
and it was funny because they showed like a flyer of a Yeah 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 show, and there was like three bands lower on the bill that all bands that I like Oneida and like other bands that I saw and liked. I was like, what about those bands?
I feel like that was like a glam scene, not glam like in the 70s, but it was like,
no, it wasn't glam. It was like a return to garage rock.
Yeah, but
kind
done,
of,
you it know, was stripped
but
down
done by like,
rock. Yeah,
but yeah, it had an air of like bourgeoisie to it. So the Strokes, you know, like they started hobnobbing with famous people and it was like the hip thing to do.
Yeah.
That's what every rock band ends up doing that, though.
Yeah, that's what every kind of scene blow up. But anyway, so I needed, and just ultimately, I just, the whole thing left a bad taste in my mouth because it was like no bands I actually liked. So I needed a palate cleanser. So when I got home, I found another documentary that actually the guy who cuts my hair told me to check out. That was called Nightclubbing, The Birth of Punk Rock in New York City.
Nice.
And it's actually about a lot of people, and we've talked about it in the past, but like, you know, I have a strong reverence for CBGBs and like what, you know, the Ramones and Television and Blondie and all the bands that came out of that. And then like, you know, the hardcore scene in the 80s and then I hung out there in the 90s and all stuff like that. But like, oftentimes people don't realize that there was another club called Max's Kansas City that was around from the 60s until the 80s that had a very similar trajectory and like as important as CB's was in terms of like Max's was where the New York Dolls emerged. Like Alice Cooper played there early on. It was the first place Iggy Pop played. Yeah. And then like in the early 80s, it changed ownership. And then in the early 80s, it was also a spot for hardcore, like Agnostic Front played there a lot and stuff like that. So like, I don't know. So that was a nice palate cleanser of like a New York, like two New York City based documentaries. One that was just like a bit of a sham and another one that was like, oh, you know, people should watch this. And so I would recommend Nightclubbing, The Birth of
Was it a sham because it was a bad documentary, or was it a sham because you don't like the bands?
I thought it was a bad documentary, not because I didn't like the bands or because of the subject, but just also like the way it was handled. Like I actually wrote about it on Facebook and some of my friends were like pointing out, they're like, oh yeah, like on top of say what you about the music, but like also it was a poorly made documentary. Mm-hmm. So it was just like, it just didn't feel good, you know?
Where was the ladder? Is it streaming somewhere?
Oh yeah, no. So I watched the Meet Me in the Bathroom one. I watched on the plane on JetBlue, and then I looked up to see where it was available, and apparently it's linked to Showtime. Okay. So if you have the Showtime add-on on Amazon or you have Paramount Plus, you can watch it. That sort of thing. And then Nightclubbing, I rented from Amazon for like $1.99.
Okay, that I'd watch.
Yeah, definitely. I strongly recommend it, Josh. You would like it.
Like I have a very strong image of CBGBs in my head, so when you read about it or whatever, I'm like, okay, I get. But right. Max's Kansas City, I've only read about. Or what's the one in New Jersey across the river? You said it the other day.
Maxwell's.
No. Is it Maxwell's?
The one in New Jersey?
Yeah.
In Hoboken?
Yeah, okay, that is.
It's called Maxwell's, right. Yeah.
Okay.
I went to Maxwell's. I went there all the time. But Max's Kansas City, like, yeah, I had no frame of reference for. Oh. Like, I've read about it, like, knew it existed and heard people talking about it both, like, in terms of music and the hardcore scene, but didn't realize that, like, Andy Warhol and everybody hung out there. And, like, that I just found absolutely fascinating. See the photos and stuff like that. So, Josh, you would really dig it.
Did you read that Legs McNeil book that I talked about last year? Just Kill Me,
no,
Please Kill Me.
I think you'd really love it. I didn't. It's on my list, though.
Yeah. It'll go quick because you'll be like, I know all these people and I know all this stuff about them. Yeah. Worth it.
Josh, what are you up to?
I've been watching the NBA playoffs. I was thinking about whatever else it is that's going on, and that's kind of it. All the other shows we're slowly getting through are the ones that we have all talked about lots of times. But for, I don't know, when is it? For the last month, we've just basically been watching playoff games every night, and that's kind of it.
Getting your heart broken?
A little. But like the first two rounds have been fantastic. They were like, they're upsets. I love upsets. Number eight seeds beat number one seeds, and like people don't do what's expected. I think it's a heck of a lot of fun. So Connor is referring to the fact that we're Celtics fans. We followed them. My wife has watched every single game this year, and they are, as the time of this recording, about to get eliminated by the Miami Heat.
The Western and Eastern Conference Finals are both 3-0 at the time of recording.
But one side is the way it's supposed to be, and the other side isn't. So like you would expect the one seed to demolish the eight seed. That's fair. But you have the Miami Heat who barely made it into the play-in. They lost their first play-in game. And then they went through the Bucks, who were the best.
Isn't it a playoff?
So they changed it.
I don't even want to know the answer. I don't want to know the answer.
They took the last two slots of the eight.
Why do they keep messing with all this nonsense?
Because the problem that the NBA has is that no one cares about the regular season anymore.
Yeah.
And so they have to expand the postseason.
No, but at the same time, like, it's all of a sudden there's like a one game, really exciting, sort of like Final Four type of vibe to it. And it's super exciting.
Eventually, every sports league is just going to be the playoffs.
I mean, it's called the regular season. Just make that all.
Hey, listen, I love the regular season. I watch all the baseball games.
Yeah, so we've been doing that, and like it's been super fun. Like, nothing you expected to happen would happen. You know, we watched last year, but I know a lot more this year. So everything has a I know that you guys are like lifelong sports fans, but the last time I paid attention, I was a teenager, and now, you know, there's stories and there's characters and there's, you know, if you like the story of Jimmy Butler and the Miami Heat this year has been super fun. You know, watching, you know, the Lakers try to do something that nobody thought they'd be able to do has been crazy. They're not going to, but they went farther than everybody expected them to.
Ron, Josh has asked me to move the pick of the week recording time a few times because of game conflicts.
I like to point out, as much as I love baseball in the World Cup, I would never do that to you, Connor.
Well, it's a family thing.
Sure, that's a good excuse.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just to make Lindsay happy. Also, I enjoy that. So,
so I'm going to mention a couple of things. One show that Ron's watching, so I'm not going to say much about it, but we watched Jury Duty.
I just watched the second episode right before
the second episode.
This.
Okay, so that's on Freevee. That's the free channel from Amazon Prime. It's still on Prime, but it's the free sort of sub channel. So there's ads on it. I wasn't going to watch it. If you haven't watched it, it's a reality show about jury duty. The twist is that one guy thinks he's on jury duty. Everybody else is an actor. And I wasn't initially going to watch it because I feel like those shows are always about making fun of the guy. But this one is sort of the opposite.
It's so good.
And so it was very feel good. And the level of improv happening is off the charts.
I mean, I'm only two episodes in, and even I like to see they're doing improv, but also seeding stuff to use on the show. Like, it's working on multiple layers. It's like it's really impressive.
And James Marsden is playing himself on it, so he's the other.
Which
sort of hook.
And Connor, I was talking about it with my sister yesterday. I think that is perfect casting.
Yeah.
Because he is just famous enough to think that he's someone, but not famous enough for you to immediately know who he is. And that works out so well in this format.
Yes.
Especially with the guy who's the subject, because he like doesn't know. And like at every episode, he's like, oh, I rented Sonic. And I like,
it's totally right. He's just famous for you. Like, is that a famous guy?
Yeah. He looks famous. He looks like he should be, right? He's got that face. And
there is one other actor who I recognize from a couple of things I thought was too, not famous, but too recognizable to have been chosen for this particular project. But apparently the guy didn't, so it doesn't matter. Yeah. But I will say that I saw James Marsden on Stephen Colbert talking about it. And he said that whenever the guy got too suspicious, they would load him up with boring court stuff. So they would just do like 3 or 4 hours of real court stuff. And I can't even imagine having to do that in character. Like, it's just crazy. I mean, I'm really impressed by the whole production of it.
Yeah, no, it was the kind of thing my sister started watching, and she was like, oh, you got to check this out. I knew it was out there in the ether, but reality, you know how I feel about reality.
Yeah.
And stuff. And then you mentioned that you were watching it, like, it's really good. And then my sister was like, it's so fun. And so I was like, all right, let me try. So we watched the first episode like 2 weeks ago, and then I had a bunch of travel and stuff like that. So we just dove back in tonight.
Really enjoyable, really enjoyable. And the last episode's really terrific. I've been dragged into this dopey show called The Traitor on Peacock, which is basically just people playing werewolves or mafia, but like reality stars. But it's hosted by Alan Cumming, and he's wearing a series of fabulous and ridiculous outfits. It's all being shot in Scotland at a castle that's supposed to be his castle. He's the master of ceremonies for the game. It's really dumb, and I don't feel good, but at the end of every episode, I'm like, well, what's going to happen next? It's just stupid.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention for Ron, because Alan Cumming is really terrific, and he's having a great
time. I love
time,
Alan Cumming.
And I hope they're paying him a lot of money.
Alan Cumming is not discerning in work. Let's just put that. Because we're finding out a lot of that working actors need to work, and so, you know, he'll take something. So
they all need to work. Not denigrating.
He's not getting in big movies anymore, so.
And then finally, this past weekend, I saw Fast X at the theater. My first time seeing a Fast and the Furious film in the theaters. And leading up to that, I rewatched all of the movies. Which is good, because it had been a couple of years, and I'd forgotten a lot.
Well, they're really complex plots, though, right? I mean,
they actually are, because they keep doubling back on itself. One of the things it's been doing is it will constantly revisit a moment from a previous film, recontextualize, retcon it, and so you have to kind of remember what about it. They're constantly bringing characters back from the dead. It's a full-on superhero film. It's fun, but I wouldn't say they're good anymore. Like the series peaked around 6 and 7. There's been 10 films and a spinoff.
Now there's going to be 13, right? This is a trilogy.
He said
right?
12, but yeah.
No, he just came out and said it's a trilogy.
Well, that'd be 10, 11, 12 then.
Yeah. Math.
Yeah, I was expecting this to be the final film, and I forgot. Like, I was so into the movie, I forgot it was not a full film, so it ends on multiple cliffhangers, and I went, wait a minute, and they went, oh, right, it's not a full film, it's a half of a film. Every franchise does that now, but I do think it's impressive they've been doing this for 22 years. They've been telling basically, it's not a continuous story, but basically the story of this same group of characters for 22 years. Before Marvel started doing it.
He has a family, right? Like,
he's got a family, he's got a lot of coronas.
You don't mess with his family.
Right? It's all about family. If you don't have family, you don't understand family.
Right, right.
They've been doing it for 22 years. It's mostly the same group of characters. They started before Marvel in terms of the long continuous storyline. They started before Marvel in terms of the mid and post-credit sequence, which happened, I think, at the very first film in 2001. In terms of the mid post-credit sequence, adding something to the story or teasing something from the story, bringing a character back. They're full-on superhero films at this point. 6 and 7 basically turned the page on them being like super spies. And it's just at this point you watch for the spectacle of what could they do with a car. Jason Momoa joined this one as the villain. He's very entertaining in it, but it's a spectacle. I had a really good time watching it, but 5 through 7 are actually, I thought, really strong action movies. And then it gets like ridiculous, but in a fun way.
Do they still Tokyo Drift?
I think there was a drifting in this one.
Oh, really? Nice.
That was the third one.
That was the third one, but I like that one. A lot of people don't, but I think that one's really fun because it's just so different from the other ones.
Cool.
But it was fun. I enjoyed it. Now I'm going to do the same thing for Mission Impossible. I'm going to watch all those and get ready for that one.
I've lost track of which Mission Impossible I saw last. I like watching them, but I don't.
They're so good. They're really good.
Totally. I just lost track of it.
You can jump on. I can give you one to jump on in the middle because it sort of started like when Christopher McQuarrie took over. That's when they started doing a continuous story.
I don't want to have missed any is my point. Like, I don't remember. I think the last one I saw was Henry Cavill and there's a bathroom fight.
Oh, that's the last one.
Was it?
I think so.
Okay.
That was the most recent one, I believe. It's been a while.
Ever since the pandemic fucked up theater releases, I've lost track.
They haven't put one out. It's a Tom Cruise film. They haven't put one out yet. So I think you're caught up.
All right. Good to go. And so there's a new one coming out.
Yeah, there's a new one coming out in July.
All right.
So that's what I'm looking forward to. I like going to the movies. I've been going to the movies more and more since life has returned to normal.
I like going to the movies. I took my kids to see the Super Mario Brothers movie.
Good movie.
It was fun. Yeah. It was surprising how many, like...
Yes.
Easter eggs or references or whatever that they worked into the plot and into the story in a plausible, like the fact that they made Mario Kart a section of the film. Mm-hmm. I salute them for figuring that out.
I thought it was really well done from the good people who brought us Minions.
Yeah.
Did they rock the floor when they jumped their cars?
No, they didn't. I was trying to explain that to my son, and he didn't quite understand.
So was that their first film? Their first?
It was. Theater? It was. And as I said, it wasn't my first choice for their first movie, but at least the lead characters are reflecting from our heritage, our Italian-American heritage.
That's a good segue to talking about Return of the Jedi, the 40th anniversary, which... was it 2 weeks ago? Was it in the theaters? Was that what it was?
Let me set the scene here. I was online, I don't know, just doing something, working, and I saw the new poster that they had put out to celebrate the 40th anniversary, but like, I think I was buying a movie ticket like on Fandango, and I was like, oh, Return of the Jedi is playing. And I was like, oh, cool. I gotta check this out. And this is silly because I also work for the company. I should realize this was going on, but to celebrate the 40th anniversary of Return of the Jedi, they released it in theaters again, the special edition, which we'll get to in a moment, but it only ran for like a week and a half or like 2 weeks
short.
It was a short run, and it like ended on, god damn it, on May 4th.
Yeah. The first weekend, it was like the number 4 movie at the box office. Like, it did really well.
It's a great movie.
Right, I'm just saying, it did really well. People went out for it.
Yeah. And to the point where I'm like, just keep it running. At least keep it running until the actual anniversary, which is Memorial Day weekend. Jeez.
I would have gone. Yeah. I couldn't go the week it came out, so I was bummed like you guys went. But if it had been another week, I would have gone.
Yeah. I kind of saw like over the weekend a bunch of people I knew had gone, and I was like, oh man, did I miss it? Because it seemed like one of those things that was just going to be like one weekend. And I saw that there was like 2 days left where it was showing. So I took off from work early one day and I went and saw it like late afternoon. And I'm very glad I did.
Yeah, so I bought my ticket and I went, and I cannot, like, to echo you, just like, I cannot say how happy I was to go see it in the theater. And so, like, I walk in the theater and, like, I went by myself. Like, I went after the kids went to sleep, my wife went to bed. So I you know, just went, which now I've come to love a movie by myself. Like, it used to be like a great social activity, but now, buddy, I love it.
Welcome to the club.
So I'm sitting there watching the stupid pre-show with Maria Menounos.
You mean Nuvi?
Nuvi. I'm pretty sure they run that on Freevee also, along with Jury Duty. But so I'm watching people come into the theater because, like, I'm like, oh, there better not be somebody to fuck this up for me. Because I'm no longer, like, I don't go to Alamo anymore because I'm not in the city. I'm out in the suburbs now. So I have to go to, like, to the AMC, like the like a regular schlub. You know, they put ketchup on egg noodles. And so I'm watching. And then, like, this group of, like, eight nerds come in and sit in the row in front of me. And I was like, oh, don't do it. Don't do it. And the movie started. The lights got dim. And, like, they applauded when the Star Wars logo went out. I was like, oh, God. And I'm waiting for the Josh of the group to, like, say a line or something like that. Yeah, exactly. And luckily.
Fuck yourself.
Luckily, they were quiet. Nobody talked the entire film. Great. It was great. It was
I guarantee you reverence. I have gotten into more verbal altercations for me telling people to shut up.
Yeah, but you were younger in your younger days. You were not
not in the movies, though. That was sacrosanct. I know what you're saying, but in the theater.
Anyway, so glad I saw it in the theater. I hadn't seen Return of the Jedi. It's been several years.
Well, okay, let's back that up to our history of it. So I know this wasn't anyone's first film in the theaters because it came out, we were seven, six?
It's the first one I remember demanding to go to and anticipating.
I was in the womb for A New Hope. You guys were born. Ron, did they take you to A New Hope? Is that what you said?
Well, yeah. So the story goes, they took me to A New Hope. I was born in early May and A New Hope came out Memorial Day weekend. And supposedly they took me sometime when it was in the theater in May or June. So unknown if that's true or not.
It ran all summer.
Yeah, exactly. And they didn't get a sitter. And then my mom said, I didn't sleep. I just sat there with my eyes open the whole time and clearly just osmosis.
So for Empire, that was the first film I was told I was taken to the theater. I don't have no memory of whatsoever because I was three or whatever.
I remember being in Italy when I was three or four and seeing posters for Empire Strikes Back on the street because I remember the blue poster. And I remember seeing Empire Strikes Back at the drive-in, but unknown if it was in 80 or if it was like
one of the many re-releases.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Now for Jedi, I distinctly remember going twice. I remember seeing it at the theater in Manhattan when it came out, and then I remember seeing it again over the summer on vacation, like in the where we were going on vacation. I distinctly remember that.
I remember going to Return of the Jedi at the RKO Theater on Jericho Turnpike in Comac, next to the Candlelight Diner, across the street from the Toys R Us, and standing in like a line that wrapped around the building several times for like long enough that my dad went next door to the diner and got us all burgers and brought us over to sit and eat while we were waiting. Like that, I distinctly remember that. Cannot tell you about the movie experience. I was 6 years old. I don't remember once we went into the theater. I don't remember what that was like, but I remember standing outside and like wanting to go to Toys R Us to get the new figures and like asking my dad, can we go to Toys R Us? It's right there. And like being told not to because you had to cross the street and Jericho Turnpike's a big road.
I feel like I remember all sorts of that movie. I mean, like coming out and being excited about Ewoks, the green lightsaber.
Yeah.
I remember the toy commercials with Ewoks in the woods, like the kid, the commercials where kids playing. I remember, I distinctly remember those commercials.
So what's interesting is, you know, I think we all were the right age to love Return of the Jedi. But then as you got older, I mean, like all my friends saw it, loved it. And everyone I knew in person. But then when you like went to college, I remember, and our first exposure to the internet, which at the time was text-based. And suddenly everyone's like, Jedi sucks.
Yeah.
And Lando sucks for some
reason. I hadn't heard that until later. And I was like, what?
Yeah. So the prevailing idea was that Jedi was terrible. And I was like, I don't think Jedi is terrible. But then it started to seep in my brain. I was like, well, is Jedi terrible? And then I remember distinctly, you know, special editions come out. We're in college. It's 97. So we are 20 years old. And I remember going to the first one. I remember going to the second one. One of those groups, I took people from college down. Like I remember our friend Jared, when came down. I distinctly remember the Jedi experience. I distinctly remember the Star Wars experience. It was like the first time ever seeing that in the theater for me, or at least remembering it. Maybe as a kid, when a re-release, we saw it. I don't really remember much about Empire. I think that was the one I took the guys from college. We drove down. I think Michael Moore was there.
I know that after Empire, we snuck into National Lampoon's Vegas Vacation afterwards.
But I distinctly nice. Remember Jedi and how exhilarating it was in a sold out theater, and especially that last bit, the ending, the three pronged ending. and the crowd cheering at all the right moments. And I remember coming out of it going, fuck anyone who thinks this is a bad movie. This movie's awesome. I saw this for this show on Disney Plus. I didn't get to go in theater, but even just rewatching it all the way through, because I've seen snippets of it here and there. It's always on TV. But just sitting down and watching from straight to finish, I was like, oh, man, this movie's awesome.
It's so funny because, like, as we entered from our, like, fandom stage into our, like, critic pundit stage, whatever, like, you know, we've read, you know, like, we've all read the Rinsler books. Like, I've read so much on Star Wars, stuff like that, and so much criticism, so much stuff like that. And, you know, down to the level of, like, Lucas going through his divorce at the time, and, like, Marquand and his, you know, qualities of director, and, like, the Harrison Ford of it all, and just, like, all this shit that is swirls around the cloud of this movie. I walked out of the theater seeing it, you know, as the part of his 40th anniversary. I'm like, God, I love this movie.
Yeah.
It's I don't care what you think of Marquand as a director. I don't care. Like, I've heard people say, like, oh, it's a glorified TV movie. And, like, you know, like, all this sort of stuff. It works on such a visceral level for me. And I don't know if it's our age, you know, me, you know, us being born in 77 and, like, growing up with Star Wars as religion, or watching, you know, like, from when they did the VHS re-release with those bad logos. Remember that like brick that came? Yeah. Like, I remember getting those in high school and, like, watching them all through college. And then we went to the re-releases at the Pyramid Mall, and, you know, me and Gordon, the intern, were first. We lined up when the movie theater opened to get first in line, and, like, what are you doing here? Like, no one else was there.
That was early in the line age. Most people think it happened around Lord of the Rings, but no.
And I distinctly remember being in college and post-college, I used to just pop the movie in and watch the opening sequence to the point where Jabba's sail barge explodes.
Oh, great.
And, like, that as a 25-minute episode is, like, it's perfect. It's it's funny. It's got action. It's, like, all this sort of stuff. And, like, coming out of this movie, I was so compelled because I wanted to, like, write a long rant online, but I didn't. I have no problem with Ewoks. Every malign decision of this movie, I completely disagree with, and it's completely done through a filter and a bias of just love.
Yeah, I mean, the Ewoks were originally supposed to be Wookiees, and everyone's like, oh, it would have been cooler with Wookiees. Yeah, but it wouldn't have been as interesting with Wookiees, because Wookiees would have torn everybody apart.
Here's the thing. We got Wookiees in the prequels, and guess what? It wasn't cool.
Right.
What made Wookiees cool was that there's one of them. There's just the one. And yes, we found out about Mala and Lumpy and Life Day and stuff like that. But that was that weird thing that you couldn't get, really. And you just heard people talking about. But, like, it's the fucking mystery of, like, it's just one big hairy fucking dude who's best friends with Han. Like, maintain the mystery.
Right.
I'm glad it wasn't Wookiees.
What's interesting that you said that is that, like, I was excited for the parts that came after Jabba. Like, it's fine. It's good or whatever. But I really liked when they went to space, and then they went, because I loved the Ewoks. And when Star Wars Minute did Return of the Jedi, I asked for the Ewoks because I talked about exactly this thing, which was that, like, you know, like, have you lost all your joy in life? Like, we were seven.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, how do you not like Ewoks? They're kind of creepy looking now, but at the time they were cute because we didn't.
I thought they totally worked.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. They're just a little more, I don't know. They're a little more human than they are teddy bear when I look at them now. Like,
well,
like,
sure.
Lips, yeah, they're not faces. Teddy bears. And I was like, a little creepy. But I loved it. You know, like, we can't judge this in any way, you know.
But it also adds to the idea of the little guy taking the Empire down. Wouldn't be as compelling if it's an army of 8 foot tall, you know, super technologically strong monsters.
David versus Goliath, you know? Yeah. But there's so much layered. And part of it is because I think it definitely is because of our fandom and our, like, growing up on it, that we have analyzed this movie to death, all the aliens at Jabba's palace, all the intricacies of the Empire bureaucracy as they're building.
The Emperor's coming here.
Crix Maydeen's haircut. I mean, we have analyzed this movie down to, like, the minutia, and it holds up. And watching it in the theater, it so holds up so much.
I agree with you that the Jabba Palace scene is great, but also, like, Josh, I distinctly remember watching the speeder bike scene for the first time and being like, holy fuck. And
no, what it is, it's also like the documentary about the making of this.
Yeah.
I know by heart.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I could point out every model shot of the speeder bike thing from watching that.
Oh, you mean the one where it goes, it leans in, it goes up, it turns its head, it comes back down.
Exactly.
But I do want to talk about the directing, because I really do think that the final sequence where there's it's Luke and Vader on the Death Star, it's the space battle, and then it's the battle on the Endor. I think that scene is expertly put together in terms of it builds tension. It never leaves one for too long. anytime you wonder what's happening with Luke, it comes right back to it. Like, I remember watching the theater for the special edition. By the time it gets to the end and all the tension's released, you're just like exhausted and emotionally spent. And the moment when Luke refuses to kill Vader and says, and turns his lightsaber off and says, "I'm a Jedi like my father before me," the theater went fucking bonkers when I saw it.
Yeah.
It's just such a great sequence. And maybe the stuff in the middle that could be tightened up. Maybe Mark Kwan's not as good a director as Kirshner and Lucas, and he's not, but it doesn't matter because the pieces of it all work so well.
And the script is really good. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of great lines. And
the chemistry.
In it.
The chemistry between the actors is terrific.
I think the first thing when I was older that really hit me, when we were in college, we talked about Star Wars a lot. It was
a lot.
So like the special editions couldn't have hit at a better time because we were already primed. There was not like, it's not like we were like, oh, I haven't thought about that forever.
No, we were ready. We'd had 7 years of novels or four years of novels at that point?
Yeah.
And a decade of action figures and toys and stuff like that. Yeah.
So the thing that always stood out to me was the second Death Star scene, the space battle, like flying through it. And I was like, this is amazing. I watched it just now in the theater and I thought, this is a great action scene with spaceships in a place that doesn't exist. And the fact that that was able to be done with practical effects is amazing. Yeah. And it looks much better than it should. Or than you would expect anyway, given the time.
It looks, what always struck me about the space battle scene, and it's so funny because hearing George Lucas talk about Star Wars, right?
Mm-hmm.
The curse of Star Wars for Lucas is that he hates it because he couldn't make it all look like what was in his head, right? And so that's why he did the prequels and, you know, all that sort of stuff, because he wanted to make it. But like, you can see the marked application of the technology of the time, starting in 1975 when they started the film, to 1983 to finishing Jedi, of like, it's the culmination of that combination of blue screen and practical effect. And like, the space battle scene looks amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just looks so good, right?
That's the tragedy of him burying the originals, is that it is a legitimate piece of cinema history, what they were able to pull off with 1970s technology. I mean, I still remember talking to my mom about how, because I was like, Mom, what was it like when you saw Star Wars? She was like, oh my God, that first shot, we all lost our minds. Like, it was so new and exciting. And that's the real bummer. I mean, like, I'd love to have those films on a nice Blu-ray, but like, just because like, this is how movies were made back then. I don't want every movie to be remastered and remixed. And
so, you know, when rejiggered. I went, I was sitting in the theater and I was like, is there any chance this is the original? Because I didn't really know. I hadn't read anything or thought about it. And I wasn't entirely sure. And then, you know, they got into Jabba's palace. Because I guess there's a shot outside. Maybe that's when I saw it.
It eats the bug.
Yeah. And I don't know if I just missed that or didn't see it or whatever. But I think I was in the palace and I saw a couple of the aliens that shouldn't have been there. And I was like, ah, crap.
Well, once this music kicks in, you know, it's wrong.
Yeah.
I actually thought about this, you know. There's lots of things I would take out of special editions, like probably 90% of it. There's a couple of things I think actually do make it slightly better. Like, it's mostly an Empire. Empire seems to be the least egregious in terms of the special edition changes. They sort of just use it to like fill out Bespin and stuff like that.
They did the backgrounds to the outside of Cloud City and stuff like that. But I don't want to get into analysis of that.
Most of it doesn't really bother me, but also like, we lived with the special editions longer than without them. Like, I haven't seen the originals in forever.
I've seen the originals way more than I've seen special editions.
This is the inevitable special edition kind of thing. And the only thing that gave me a distaste of watching this movie in the theater for the 40th anniversary was, you know, in Jabba's palace, having to sit through fucking Jedi rocks.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Terrible.
Which is horrible, right? Like, and admittedly, like, I have sentiment towards Lapty Neck, and probably looking back at Lapty Neck, it's probably not the greatest thing. Although going back to that documentary, I just hear sis 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 wow.
Those songs are fine. Wow. They're good songs.
When he's doing Slice Noodle's mouth, and he's sis 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 wow. But Jedi Rocks is just like such a record scratch.
Yeah.
This doesn't fit, you know, kind of thing.
Does not fit.
And then at the end of the film,
ugh.
I would have been fine with cutting in shots of Coruscant celebrating and Cloud City celebrating, but don't get rid of Yub Nub. Like, Yub Nub is so...
Justice for Yub Nub. Hashtag justice for Yub Nub.
Old man complaining about the special edition.
Yeah, but, yeah. One more, and we can. Well, actually, this one of them is relevant. One of them isn't. My real big problem with them is just that visually, the new stuff doesn't match the old stuff.
Like, right. So it sticks out. Like, it doesn't fit. Yeah.
And so there's a reason, like, it doesn't work. So getting to the end of the movie, I also know that the special editions have been tinkered with. Like, over the year, they've changed him more or add what... I mean, I don't know if that was pre-Lucas or whatever, but as we get to the end of this movie and you see the three Jedi, the Force Ghost, Anakin, and Yoda, and...
They take it with them after the prequels. They added Temuera Morrison's voice into...
Right.
Yeah.
But I did think, like, I was like, well, kind of shouldn't it be young Anakin?
No.
Well, no, this is because the old Anakin like that never existed.
I don't know. He did exist.
He takes the mask off and he's Anakin.
He absolutely existed. It should. I really think the Force ghost. The Force ghost should be what you looked like when you died, right? And so that makes sense. The fact that his
and he should
Force
have been all fucked up.
No, I'm fine with it going back to his original body kind of look.
Should Obi-Wan just be a half a body floating?
I'm not really fighting for this.
What I'm saying is, as soon as he takes the helmet off, take my mask off so I can look at you, he's Anakin again. Mm-hmm. Vader's dead.
It doesn't make any sense for it to be young Anakin, and that's a problem. And also, he looks creepy as hell in that shot.
Not his fault.
He's doing that, like, up look kind of thing. Yeah.
If I could get rid of one special edition change in all of the movies, it would be Vader saying no.
Yes, that was bad too. Yeah.
When he grabs the Emperor, it was such a powerful, silent moment of him looking from back and forth and back and forth. And
no.
And then when he goes, no, you're just like, man, why?
It's just so bad. Yeah. And I get that it bookends the no at the end of Sith, but like, we don't need that moment bookended. Like, that no was bad too. Like, that was so, I don't know. I don't want to complain though. Let me talk about
It's just those things stick out when you watch. Because Josh, I haven't. Yeah. Hardly watch the special issues because your roommate gave me knockoff DVDs of the originals way back in 2001. So I've had
almost got put on the no-fly list
because of them. I flew internationally with them, but I've been watching those almost the entire time.
I mean, the only thing about that was that, like, when the Blu-rays first came out of Star Wars, I was like, I've never seen Star Wars look this crisp, so I'll deal with that because I want to.
If I could cut one special edition change, I think I would. I agree with you. The no is bad, but it probably would be Jedi Rocks just because it just hits the rhythm so poorly. But I don't want to dwell on the complaint. I want to celebrate the things I loved, right?
Moff Gerard?
Things I loved. No, but before we get Moff Gerard, I know I talked about how great that opening scene in Jabba's palace is, but the moment they put Luke out on the plank to jump into the Sarlacc, right? When the music goes into the bassoons, the womp. Womp, and then you've got the skiff flying around joyriding, and you've got R2 getting a position, and like the tension of like what's gonna happen, and then the fucking jump, and the music kicks in, and the lightsaber shoots out, and he ignites it, and it's green, and it's just like, and at that point, as a kid, and all growing up all through the 80s, like that represented such an energy boost of what movies can do for you.
Yep,
I always get chills at that moment. I know what's coming, I know what's gonna happen, but it always gets me every time.
No, for sure. I thought that too.
Yeah. I love that we didn't know how he got a new lightsaber, why it was green. Like, all that shit was just left for you to fill in the blank. I love that. Like, don't explain everything.
Are you
like,
sure there wasn't a comic that explained
it? It's literally the current storyline in Star Wars right now.
Right, I know, but I'm not reading it clearly. But at that moment, I just love that they didn't explain that. And then this is a weird thing, but I love how shiny Vader's armor was when he got on the Death Star.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It went from being matte black in the early movies to like, oh shit, like it made me feel like he was even more badass, you know, like just little touches like that. And of course, Moff Gerard and Crix Madine and the entire Mon Calamari fleet and Wedge. And the matte painting of the Falcon when Lando and Han are arguing about it, when he's trying to get Lando to take it. And you can clearly tell it's a painting. And I love it.
On the screen, I was like, whoa. That's obviously a matte painting.
Get out of here, you pirate.
I just think back to college and all the times we would quote Moff Gerard or somebody else.
The Emperor's coming here?
Just for no reason whatsoever. We just look at each other and go, the Emperor's coming here?
We shall double our efforts. Oh, no, I love the banter between Luke and Han when they get reunited at Jabba's palace. Like, how we doing?
Same as always. That bad, huh?
Same as always. That bad, huh? It's like Martin Lewis. It was great.
Well, that made me think of the sequels, and the one real sin of the sequels is there was never a Han and Luke reunion. Yeah. That was the one thing that really made me the most disappointed about those movies was, how do you not have those actors do a scene? Well, at least one scene. Because they're so great in this movie. They're great. You know, Leia, Lando, the whole sort of family they've got going. It was fun. I remember, watching this when they're laying out the plan and they say, it gets really serious when Mon Mothma comes out and says, this is our one chance. The Emperor's on the Death Star and many Bothan spies died to bring this information. And I remember as a kid being like, "Ooh, what does that mean?" And then even as an adult watching it today, 40 years after seeing it originally, I was like, "Ooh," because there's a great music bed underneath it. It gets really serious. There's stakes now. This is their one chance to win.
Oh, I thought you meant the Ewoks made steaks.
The steaks, the Ewoks cool. do make steaks. They're hand steaks.
Doop, doop, boop, ba, da, do, da,
and the oh, and the Emperor too, right? Like so we had seen a glimpse of the Emperor in Empire.
Me and my sister still quote the Emperor. Like my sister will just text me. She'll say, "I'm afraid the deflector shield." Like, I'm afraid. Like, he's just so. It was so mean. Like that was like, "Oh, I'm afraid that the like we know what you're doing." Like, oh, it was so good. It was so good.
People don't talk about the fact that the Emperor was extremely sarcastic.
Exactly.
He was a sassy
not really
little bitch.
Something you want to think of, but he's like, "Oh, you want this? Oh, is the best."
It's almost like an old pulp villain, you know, like a Vincent Price situation. But I remember a professor in college, one of my many writing professors, trying to say that the Emperor was a bad villain because you didn't know the Emperor's motivation. I was like, I don't care about the Emperor's motivation. He's the Emperor. He's in charge of this thing, and it's bad.
I can imagine being at the point where you're a film person and you've thought a lot of stuff, and you can look at it on paper and then say, "Well, this doesn't make any sense because of this. It's weak because of that." But then also at the same time, completely discount the idea that like film is supposed to make you feel something. And at the end of the day, if it makes you feel that thing, it doesn't matter. Listen, I was pretty close to being in that trap, but I've have come around to go, okay, I see a fuller picture of what's sort of really important about this stuff. It's sad.
Right.
And it's a professor. So as you're a kid, you're like, well, okay.
No, I remember feeling, wow, I don't, what? Why? Who cares? Who cares? Did anybody care about Emperor Tojo's motivation in World War II? Like that was the guy in charge and you had to take him out.
I've read books about it. So I
read but like you didn't need to know at the time to go fight him. You know, it was just like, he's clearly bad. And oh man, it made me think of, that whole final sequence where, I remember as a kid being freaked out by the Force Lightning.
Oh yeah. There's a moment in the Force Lightning when it zaps him and you can see his skull.
Yeah.
Like that stuck with me as a kid. That was, yeah.
Well, that whole final sequence from the moment he gets on there and he meets Sassy Emperor to the point where they cross lightsabers. And this is my favorite lightsaber battle in all of Star Wars is this Vader one. Because there's actual emotional stakes. Yeah, it's not as acrobatic and well choreographed as the new ones are, but it has so much emotion to it. You've got the buildup of three films here. A father fighting the son. A son trying to save the father while being manipulated by this evil. There's so much great stuff here. And then it stops. He hides somehow. And like there's just a great tension to it.
I thought when I was a kid when he was hiding, I was like, he'd know where he is. He's right there. And I thought the same thing when I watched it this time.
But then, like, then Vader taunting him. He's like, well, if I can't have you, I'll take your sister. And then, like, Luke lashing out and touching the dark side. Like, it's just, there's so much going on.
Yeah, he really comes close to fulfilling that dark side thing. Yeah. Like, it's very, it is very tense in that way. And I also really liked where we left off in Empire was we had a sort of idea of the Force. And I think what was really cool is that we move into the third film, they are all much more comfortable with the Force and like Vader's on that ship.
Really?
And they kind of buy it. They're like, they say no, but they're in denial. But like, they're not writing Luke off anymore when he says shit like that. And then Vader's chasing him around. He's like, sister. And he's like, oh, fuck, you read his mind. Like, he could. Yeah. Like, all that stuff was great.
Yeah, it has moments I probably think about the most, maybe because as a kid, it imprinted on my brain more than Empire did. Because you watched it a lot as a kid because the Ewoks.
We've talked about it for years, and I think we're all understanding in agreement that, like, unabashedly, Empire is the best film of the three, mm-hmm. right? Yes. But I have so much emotion and enjoyment and memory tied to to A New Hope and to Return of the Jedi that, like, I have a hard time differentiating the three of them. And, like, I love Empire, too, but, like, Jedi filled a moment because I was 6 years old. Mm-hmm. We were going to the theater. We got it. We had the toys. It was this whole thing. Like, Return of the Jedi was a moment, a cultural moment for us at that age in that year, and it just continued to be.
Yep.
And I never really thought about Return of the Jedi being the lesser of the three until the late 90s at earliest, maybe early 2000s when the film criticism started, mm-hmm. These were just religious artifacts. These three movies were just, they're up on this pedestal and they are what they are. They're great.
And partially because they went away, you couldn't watch them whenever you wanted to, unless you had recorded them off TV or gotten one of the limited VHS releases. You couldn't
That documentary, man. I'm telling you, if you can go back and find that documentary, it is the making of Return of the Jedi, whatever it's called. Like they get Phil Tippett and like all like the Jabba the Hutt puppet and like the
contemporary?
I'm sorry?
It was contemporary of the time. Like it was made Yeah. What was it? Where did you see it? What was it on?
It wasn't the one that was in the box set, was it?
I don't know.
I think it was.
Because there was that box, that big blue box that came out, had the three films and it had a documentary. I think that's what you're thinking of.
I don't know. We taped it off TV. Like, mm-hmm. That's what I think it's literally just called The Making of Star Wars Return of the Jedi.
Oh,
no, that's the Rizzler book. Sorry.
I definitely have an image in my head of them sort of showing and explaining how Jabba works.
Yeah.
From a yep. standpoint. Yep.
Pretty sure that's the one from the box set.
Yeah. I think they put it in the box set, but I remember seeing it in 1983 documentary. I just pulled it up on YouTube and my head just exploded. Yeah, it's on YouTube right now. You can find it if you look Star Wars 1983 documentary, The Making of, it's on there. Yeah, like all this stuff where they're showing like all the people and the puppets and all this sort of stuff. It's like, it was great. And actually, it's not this one I'm on YouTube is not the right one, but I'll find it. But there's like a making of documentary that I just watched all the time just because you wanted more of it, right? Like mm-hmm. It's so good.
Well, that was why we were so excited about the special editions, because it was more.
Exactly.
Oh, we're going to see a new Star Wars scene. You know, it's been 20 years. We've never seen anything new Star Wars. And that was...
Let me ask you guys a question after watching the movie again and being reminded of something that drove me crazy for ages. When in the space battle, when they take out the Executor, the mm-hmm. Superstar Destroyer, right?
Okay, I know, I'm with you.
Yep. Right? And then the Superstar Destroyer lists and then goes down and crashes into a surface.
Mm-hmm.
Was it crashing into the Death Star?
Yes.
Yes.
It was so far away from the Death Star, that whole battle. How did it get that close to it?
There are scale issues going on.
Right? Okay, I'm not wrong. Right?
You're not wrong, but it's one of those things like... Yeah. You cannot think about gravity when it pertains to Star Wars. You can't do it.
Right.
There was a Star Wars comic book issue where they started talking about gravity. I was like, nope, you can't. It all falls apart. You have to ignore that. And in that one, it seems like, all right, the Death Star is very big, but the Executor class.
Executor.
They're really big also. So it felt like that was like maybe like a regular Star Destroyer would have been that size. But I mean, I think if you look at any of the books or whatever, like the Super Star Destroyers compared to the regular ones, like it's massive, like way bigger.
Yeah. That shot. I mean, the shot looks really cool. It's cool to see it all exploding, but like there's a scale issue there. I'm not alone. Great shot. No. Yeah. But
I think it's like when we were kids and you watched the Transformers and you were just like, all right. They don't officially change sizes, but clearly they change sizes.
Right,
fine.
The best part of that sequence is when at the end, when Akbar looks over his shoulder and gives a little like, huh? You know, to the camera. Like,
yes, yeah. Yep, yeah.
I did that.
Oh God, I love Akbar. He's so good. I mean, it's a trap.
And then that moment too, when he realizes it's a trap and they all have to pull up, some of the ships crash into the shield. I was like, oh man, this is so good.
Focus all your firepower on that Star Destroyer. Yeah, it's just I just love it.
That was really good, Ron.
Thank you. Lando is a gem in this as well. Like Billy Dee is great. Is that, you know, we just got to give him more time.
And
you
know, Numb from out of nowhere. You know, I'm supposed to know him. He's a major character.
Yep. Wedge finally gets to close one out. He doesn't get yanked in the eighth inning.
He gets to go to the party at the end too.
He does. Yeah, doesn't dance though. Wedge doesn't dance.
Well, he's. He's always
nobody
always
claps training. To the rhythm like Lando, you know. I give it up. Lando got it in a cape, right?
He's a cape guy. In Empire too. He's a cape guy.
Clearly, somebody told him that is a maneuver at the Battle of Tanab. I mean, like obviously, but like no, but that whole the briefing scene, you know, when the whole like I'm with you too, like everybody like kind of like joining the team, like it's so good, it's so good. I still don't understand why they thought to bring 3PO down to Endor. Because I feel like he's not good in the field.
Well, he's got to communicate.
Well,
they
needed him. It turns out
they needed him. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But think about if you're in that briefing and suddenly that one shuttle has Luke, Leia, Han, and Chewbacca. Yeah. And you're like, well, spread out the wealth. What about these other Shrek forces? We just got regular dudes.
I actually thought about while I was in the theater was like, so they're in the briefing and they're like all the generals and all the pilots and stuff like that. And they're like doing the briefing and then they say Lando and then they go to Solo and he's like, well, I have my strike team, but I don't have what's the line? The command team, you know, and they one by one, and then Luke goes, and I'm with you too. And then the meeting just ends. Right. And like, I had to think like, are the other people like, oh, fucking Luke's back. Like, seriously,
yeah, yeah. That was not on the agenda. And they knew if he showed up, like, it was going to go on like way over time.
Right. Exactly. And then it's just like all around them, like, do we have to stop everything? Cause Luke's back, you know, like it's just like
100%.
The animosity of Luke and their little clique amongst the whole rebellion. It was like, palpable.
Oh, Jesus. These fuckers again. Altogether.
I don't like him.
They'll probably save the day. What am I going to do?
I've got this dumb helmet that wraps around my face like a donut. I got to wear this helmet.
Here I am.
I got to get my A-wing. I'm in my A-wing. You know, I can't do anything on this ship. Come on.
I'm busting my hump for years working my way up in this rebellion. I had to leave my family. Most of them were killed.
You're in an A-wing. I'm in a Y-wing.
Can we take a moment, though, and reflect on how badass the B-wing design is? I love the B-wing.
B-wing is no joke.
Yeah.
I had that toy.
What I love about the B-wing is that the cockpit is on its own gyroscope and the wings go around like that.
How do you pilot that? Toy did that.
It's so cool. It's so cool. Oh, man. Why would they bring the medical frigate to the battle?
Got a lot of casualties.
Hang back.
Help
hang
people?
hang the medical frigate back. You don't want to lose it, you know? Like, oh, man. Yeah. But
good time.
I love as the Death Star is falling apart. And all the stormtroopers and black uniform guys are running frantically. And Luke is dragging Vader. And nobody stops to be like, whoa, 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 what's going on here? Like,
it's fine.
Well, Vader's dead. And they're like, fuck, the boss is gone. This is my chance to get out of here.
And I do love the Mark Hamill's Star Trek acting as he's piloting the shuttle out of the burning Death Star and does that little like shimmy in his chair to get around the explosion. You know,
the shimmy and the sigh.
Yeah, exactly.
When he gets clear. Yeah,
it's so
all
good.
I mean, that's all incredibly emotional. I think the scene with Vader when he takes the mask off is really emotional. And then when he burns the body, I think there's really good acting in this.
Yeah,
the iconic music really helps.
There's really good acting and then there's not really good acting.
Well, Star Wars. That's part
exactly.
Of the
Luke and Leia in the Ewok village. You know, my sister has it. You know, like it's just like it was...
Yeah, exactly. But I do want to give it up for Sebastian Shaw, who has been, you know, trying to be erased from these films, but he's not. He's in the movie, and he's really good as Vader with the mask off. So that's what, three actors to play Vader? Sebastian Shaw for the face, David Prowse for the body, and James Earl Jones for the voice.
And Hayden Christensen to ruin it.
And then Jake Lloyd. That's a lot of actors.
Poor Jake Lloyd.
You're not kidding.
I could seriously go on and on with just like every little nuance of this film. I love it.
But luckily for you guys, we won't be doing that.
This was fun. Any final words on Jedi? I mean, we love it. It was great. It made me feel happy. And
it holds up, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I'm really glad that I was able to go see it in the theater because years more of context and appreciation, I was really able to sort of enjoy myself.
Point it at the deck. I love it. It's so good. That whole scene. Seriously, just watch Boba the Fett. 20 minutes, the first 20 minutes. Boba Fett. Yow! When he gets shot. But you're blind.
People think those implausible things are weaknesses, which is not the case.
No, they're strengths.
Why does Han immediately think, like Han and Leia have been telling each other, you know, we love you and this the whole time. Yep. And then she goes, he's like, it's Luke, isn't it? And she's like, yes. He goes, all right, I'll go. And I was like, you're not paying any attention, are you? Leave the room, Solo.
I like when he gets thrown in the cell with Chewie at Jabba's and Chewie's filling him in. And he's like, Luke, a Jedi? I go away for a little bit and everyone gets delusions of grandeur.
I love how happy Chewie is to see him.
Yep.
It's the best.
EV-99, great droid. Oh, God. So good.
You are an interpreter droid, are you not?
Bib Fortuna. Jabba Nabata. That was my thought. Like, as I was watching Bib Fortuna, and I'm like, God, this guy's fucking awesome. And there has never been a Twi'lek to match him on all the Mandos,
pretty faces now.
Yeah,
they're terrible.
They put Twi'leks in because like, they've got the cool thing, whatever. None of them are as menacing as that dude playing Bib Fortuna was.
I think Josh is right.
They gave him too much facial structure before. Yeah. It was like behind he had so much stuff on his face. He hardly moved. He had sharp teeth.
My idea of him is very influenced by the character that was in the Tales from Jabba's Palace book.
Mm-hmm.
He was a liar. He was a sneak. He was trying to get over things.
He's a major domo.
Yeah.
Great stuff.
Chiwunga Wunga.
Die Wana Wonga.
He's no Jedi.
Ah!
And then he just switches to English.
Basic.
That was one of my favorite things about Star Wars in general was that not everyone had to be translated. Sometimes they did, but for the most part, people just understood all the languages. I like that bit of it. Or the droids or whatever. Anyway, any final thoughts on Return of the Jedi?
I mean, let's do 3 more hours. Let's do it.
Why do they do Jedi but not the other films?
40. It's 40 years. It would be 40. It would be 43 and 46 for Empire and Star Wars.
20 wouldn't have worked.
Right, but saying 40 years for Empire, they didn't put it out for the theaters.
No, but I mean, but here we are, you know, so what?
Here we are.
Yeah. So what the next one is, what? So when it's 23, so the next one will be 50. Oh, fuck, it'll be 50 and 27. Star Wars will be 50, which means we're 50. Son of a bitch.
Do we all get together to go see that in theaters? Or is that what we're going to do for our 50th?
I'll do that. I'll do that.
We'll talk about it later. Off the show. All right, so that was Media Explode for this month. Thanks for the patrons at patreon.com/ifanboy who unlocked this show. Eventually this year, we're going to get to our old men and old movies. That wasn't what this show was, as much as it seemed
It was real close. It came real close. It came
really close. But we'll get to that one eventually later this year. We'll be back in a month with another topic that we'll figure out right before the show starts. And until then, you can listen to Josh and I review the week's comics on the Pick of the Week show. You can listen to Ron on All About Android. You just had a big All About Android.
Oh, yeah. Big month in May. We were Google I.O. It was fantastic.
Find all of our shows at ifanboy.com. We have a lot of special edition shows where we review films. Josh just reviewed the Guardians of the Galaxy film. We've got Spider-Man coming up. We've got Flash. We've got all kinds of movies coming up in the summertime.
Connor, this is like your moment, right? Like, this is just lots of movies coming out.
It is, but it's not a good time for me. I got a lot of work trips, but we'll figure it out. In the meantime, thanks for listening. That was fun. My name is Connor.
I'm Ron.
I'm Josh.
You are no longer wooden. Nub, nub, hop, ay, eat up, yum, nub. Oh, I told me to be chicken, then you got big, oh, ah. Yum, nub, 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 nub,
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.